You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Kishi Bashi. I'm here with Robin Hilton. And we are going to play for you today new music from Kishi Bashi. A new record is coming out, and we're excited about that. We're going to do a couple things. We're going to first play one new song for you. And then we'll come back and we'll talk to Kay about the new music, about the album. We're going to play cuts from the record here and there, little bits, give you a flavor of what this very different record is like. It's called Sonderlust. And then we'll take questions, too, on Facebook Live. So get ready for that. Think about things that you'd like to know, especially about this new music. And Robin Hilton, are you ready?
I was born ready. The song is called Say Yeah.
Say Yeah. Here we go.
We'll be right back.
Wow.
Love the flute, the little flute at the
end
there.
The jazz flute.
Jazz flute, indeed. I want to talk a lot about the making of the sounds of the record and so forth. But just in general, like I've listened now through the whole album, Sonderlust, and hearing that song, the first thing you think of, well, this is different. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I mean, this album is a complete departure from like what I've done in the past. It's a lot of it's like really personal. Like a lot of heartbreak and hardship kind of hit me last year. And then, I kind of tapped into that and basically made all these songs about the tumultuous journey I had last year.
Like you start to feel these awful things about crazy complications that relationships mm-hmm. can bring. Like, how does that start to come out?
For me, it's always been about music first, you know? So I started experimenting a lot. I put my violin down. I didn't kill my violin, but I dropped it off at the shelter. It's like I started off like trying to make an orchestral album, like what I thought I was good at, you know. And then I just didn't have anything in me, so I started experimenting with a lot of samples and loops and stuff that like I didn't know how my fans would react to. You know, I was like I was thinking like I would make an album for my fans and like people, you know, but then it didn't really.
But the records, your records have been about loops and that kind of experimenting,
It's kind of, but it's pretty electronic though. And I wanted like a lot of funky elements in it and like a lot of real musicians playing.
Right. So this isn't simply sitting and hearing you play on top of yourself. Let's talk about what was in that song. It sounded like there was more than one string.
There was one. I actually got a
observant, right, Rob?
Yeah, that's great.
Good one, Bob. That's why you make the medium.
Yeah,
bots.
At least two. Yeah. There were strings on them. No, I got a whole string section. Like I recorded them in L.A. Some Hollywood strings.
Really?
Yeah.
And were you the one who scored the strings?
I self score.
Right.
Yeah, I hired an arranger. Me.
Yeah.
And I got this really great string section, you know, and they kind of it's such a luxury. They're like, aren't you going to play? I'm like, no, I'm just going to conduct and just listen.
Is that part of your strategy for sort of getting out of your own head to turn it over to somebody else like that?
Well, when these people just play on movies like all day long. So it's like they're playing in the upper stratospheres. And that's like they have the level that I don't play violin like every day. I'm just like I'm gardening and like doing other things. You know? So it's like
it's hard to play violin and garden.
Well, I just mean normally you'd loop and layer your own performance and.
Yeah, I think this time around because the strings are the last thing I recorded, so yeah. I made the music first, and if it needed strings, I added it. But I didn't feel like I needed to put strings on it initially. Like I put the drums and the bass down and all the keyboards and stuff first.
But when you say you put it down, there's a band playing here, right?
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about where you recorded this, who you recorded this with, that kind of
stuff. Well, so I started off by myself, and then I went to L.A. with, like, these demos, pretty much. I worked with this guy, Chris Taylor, from Grizzly Bear.
Yeah.
And he put it to
this guy, yeah.
This guy. he's a great, you know, he's a great producer, so it's great to bounce, you know, ideas off of him, make sure I'm going in the right track, you know. And then he helped me get the string section together. Put this guy, drummer Matt Chamberlain, who's this kind of legendary studio drummer.
Indeed.
And he's a friend of mine, actually, so he squeezed it.
People hear it on like Fiona Apple Records, maybe, or...
Brad Mehldau albums. Yeah, and, yeah. Like, he's just this incredible drummer that just like... where the groove is never an issue. It's like there's no performance issues.
Right.
He just records it, and you just tell him, maybe I need a fill in this bar, and then you do this, and it's fine. And then I recently heard that he actually likes the album, which is great.
So did he lay down a lot of the rhythms without really knowing what the rest of the song was going to be like?
I had like programmed drums. Like I programmed a lot of drums, and then he's just replacing that stuff, but with incredible feel. Yeah. And just complete professionalism. So, so I had these great musicians like all over the album, and I didn't play that much. I played a lot of some of the keyboards and some of the other effects. Did all the vocals, you know?
That's interesting. So,
well, I was just thinking. I'm thinking back to the moment you come into the studio and you're like, "Well, time to make some more orchestral pop."
Yes.
I guess you'd call it writer's block, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I hit a real block because I was so burnt out from touring last year, and I had like all these crazy things going on with my life that I really just didn't have anything
So I guess what I was wondering is how do you dig yourself out of that? You're standing on the edge of this cliff creatively, you know, how do you throw yourself a rope?
Well, it was kind of tough. You know, I took a vacation, I took my computer with me, took my violin with me, tried to set myself up in like a nice place, just like really nothing. And until I started realizing that, I started using a software called Ableton Live, which mm-hmm. a lot of people use. It's like a lot of dance producers use it too. And I really got into like these sounds. And that was actually, that's when I decided that the orchestral route is just like something that's just not coming out of me now. So I'm just going to go and just make music that's fun for me and I'm excited about. And that sounds fresh to me. So that's mm-hmm. basically how this album came about. And it came out really quickly too, like 2 months.
Often the difference between, for folks who don't use music software, but mostly until Ableton Live and a few other programs, making music using software entailed basically you would lay some kind of rhythm down, and often would be some drum machine-y thing, and then you'd play on top of it, literally all very linear, mm-hmm. and then you'd lay another part down, all very linear. And what Ableton does is just throws all of that up in the air and makes you think about music in little sort of, I think of in terms of chunks, like I'll do this little chunk that, well, you could call it a chorus or a verse or something, but it could be just a rhythm that repeats, changes.
Yeah, and it's really great in creating like ideas really quickly, mm-hmm. and also samples like a lot. So basically, what I'm saying is that I was able to create like these really exciting sounds that in turn inspired me to write songs over them, and that's the direction that I started with. And once I determined that I'm not going the orchestral pop route, that's when it really started to flow, and I was like free to just kind of do whatever I want.
Ableton also lets you play samples as though you're playing an instrument, right? I mean, you can trigger them as though you're turning the samples themselves into an instrument.
Yeah, you can throw them into the sampler really quick. You can pitch shift them, and you know, so
there's lots of effects. And
so there's a lot of songs on this album where it just starts with like sounds I just created.
Wanna pick one?
Pick one.
Do you know any of the titles of your songs?
like the first one, like Malover.
Malover.
Okay. So
yeah, so that's like that sound in the beginning.
And this is, you can hear the loop.
Yeah.
There.
No, actually, there. There.
Nice try, though.
Would you be everything I wanted, and a lover and an accomplice? Could you be her? Would you feel together and inebriated, enabling of a fable we were never meant to be, but together? Misinterpret images of our innocence and vestiges of virtue. Would you feel pity for the masses who were adding and subtracting with scandals that we made together?
So there, obviously, it's your voice. I don't know how many of you are on there right there.
I hired clones.
Yeah. How many layers of voicing do you think you did on that?
Oh, I usually do like 5 or 6 usually. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then you were explaining, Robin and I, how you took little loops and vocal samples and all sorts of stuff, chopping them up.
Yeah. So like a lot of the strange child voices in there. It's all chopped up, and same with that loop.
Is that your daughter?
That's my wife, actually.
And then you pitch shifted.
Oh, yeah, pitch shifted. So I'm into like creating like weird sounds, you know, or just if it sounds good to me, it doesn't matter like if you can't identify it or not.
Do you think about like, okay, I've made this complicated thing. How am I ever going to do this in a concert?
I think about that all the time.
That's why you're not sleeping.
That's why. Actually, yeah, sometimes I'll figure out it. It's like, are people going to miss this sound if I don't play it? And then if it's yes, then I'll try and have it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I feel like most people probably won't notice.
So the core of the song is the most important.
I think, yeah, as long as I can feel like I can translate that. And I've already toured a little bit on half of the album already. You know, I did some shows, so it's sounding pretty good.
We're taking questions from listeners on the Facebook page. So if you have a question, write it there and we'll try to get to it. But there have been a number of questions about where you draw inspiration from when you're starting a song. And one thing that I thought as I was listening to you talk about this record is, remember when we were talking, Paul McCartney talked about where he gets ideas, and then he said he thinks a lot of people now, because of the technology, start with the technology, and you just start playing around with all the little sounds and things you can do, and that leads you into directions. Is that a starting point for you, or what would you say is?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think like even with this album, I was saying like I was inspired by the sounds that I was making. That, you know, my previous albums, I was still like experimenting with my violin and the loops and stuff like that, and that's really what inspired the song. It's rarely will I be just strumming a guitar or playing piano. Actually, sometimes, I don't know. Sometimes it just depends. I keep a lot of instruments around the house so I can just pick something up, and if I'm hungover or whatever, you know, you never know when, like, oh, this kind of sounds nice. And then that could be the next, you know, a song on your album.
Do you have the rule of I'm not going to, like, it's late at night, I'll remember it in the morning. And if you don't remember in the morning, then it wasn't worth remembering? No,
because I always forget everything. So I always record it on my voice. Yeah.
You do it on your phone or something?
Yeah. Wait,
what's your method?
Just voice recorder.
Record from your phone, yeah.
I also walk around, sometimes, like, I walk around, like, my last album, I remember, I think I was at a TED Med, like a TED talk, and I had so much time, you know, I'd go see a pretty interesting lecture, and then I just walk around and then kind of record ideas I had, just like beatboxing into the thing, and that became like a few songs, and I'd listen to it later. So I had a lot of sessions like that. A lot of times I'll do like 30 minute, I'll do a timer. So if I have an idea, I'll work on it for 30 minutes and I'll just start another.
You time box it.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, well, I hear that phrase used.
What's hot boxing?
Time boxing. My wife's a project manager, right. So she'll say, we're going to time box this. I think all that means is we'll set a timer.
It's interesting the time box.
It's interesting what happens when you set limitations for yourself, right? I mean, setting the timer is a form of a limited palette, right?
It also keeps you like energized about it, because if it's like, if you keep beating something over for hours and hours, it's just going to like tire you out.
Right.
And if it's inspiration you need, it's like you need to have a fresh mind, I think. You need to be energized to some extent.
We got a question from, I think it's Ramin, R-A-M-I-N, who wants to...
Ramin? The food?
No. Okay. That's B-E-N. But they wanted to know, like, especially when you do this sort of densely layered stuff, basically... how do you know when it's done? I think is a bit the gist of the question here.
How do I know when it's done?
Versus needing like one other layer or...
I've always had the problem of my music being too dense.
Do you work with somebody who says, that's enough, our time is up today?
Like a psychiatrist?
Well, I don't... anyone in the studio help you out? Well, you can go wherever you want.
I'll come back to it like the next day. And usually like I'll get a night's rest and I'll come back to it and I'll listen and I'll be like, oh, that's crazy.
Fresh ears. Yeah.
But you don't like working with another either producer or somebody, another voice.
I mean, Chris Taylor was good at like telling me, he's like, that song's crazy. But I ended up putting it on the album anyways.
When you add another layer, do you feel better, worse, or about the same?
Better, worse. I feel like because I can handle the density, like, you know, I'm an analytical person, you know, so the other thing that I like is that I'll add layers and I'll subtract different layers and see if something new
pops out
because of the unique combination of two musical ideas that were not intentionally written together, you know, so sometimes like stuff that happens. That's why I tend to go denser.
Speaking of denser, if we can just sort of scoot that little album cover back around to the camera. And for those of you now listening to the podcast, you can see the picture of the album cover online. That is a dense little thing. What's going on here? Who did it?
Well, the artist is this Korean artist.
Describe what she did here.
It's actually a beautiful stitch work. It's a stitch art, It's like a
needlepoint.
I think it's a needle of some kind.
Yeah. Or cross stitch.
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I haven't.
So this is a photograph of something that's physical.
Yeah, this is like a gallery piece. Wow. You know, and this artist was actually the art director at my label, found it for me, and he's like, "This is really kind of crazy and beautiful and intricate, and it's playful too, because there's like a bunch of little guys, you know, floating around in what looks like, I guess, some kind of subterranean hell."
Can everybody see that?
Oh, the little white figures, yeah. The little white.
But it's a really beautiful, like, kind of hell. I don't know. I see it as kind of underground and subterranean. But there's a lot of complexity and there's a lot of story in it too. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of perfect for what I was going for, because I'm complicated too, you know.
Can you talk about the title of the record? Maybe that'll help us understand a little bit about the complications.
Sure. So Sonderlust is it's a neologism. It's a new word based on another new word called Sonder. And Sonder is a word created by this guy, John Koenig, from this... it's a series of words that he's created. And he's created these amazing videos that I got really attached to, like, last year. It's called The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows.
Huh.
And he's created these beautiful words and that look like they might be from different languages to describe things that don't exist in the English language. So
what did Sonder?
So Sonder means it's, well, the definition, it's like the realization that each person or random person, like somebody you may not know, actually has a life as rich and as complicated as you do yourself.
So you walk down the street and each person walking by you is this complicated human with so many
who has this whole universe around around him that you would not but the realization that there's all these like micro connections, you know, in the world, and just kind of just a different worldview. That's what Sonder is. And Sonder.
I might have to stay in tonight and think just about that. But where's the lust?
All those
then?
Shows. The lust is, I guess, the desire to really maybe
to connect with all those.
Yeah, connect and kind of feel a part of like this larger complex universe that you've just discovered.
I've always thought of myself as simple but happy.
Hmm. This will, okay, this so
when,
the opposite.
When everybody walks by Robin,
I just see
no Sonder.
What is this flatline?
Flat. I want to hear more music. Let's go. Let's go to something else.
Forget about this depressing.
Could we play "Hey Big Star"?
Sure.
Oh, that's a good one. Let's do that.
Are you flying or sailing?
I'm on like a chroma key, you know, like clouds flying through the clouds.
Everyone knows the Hipmunk logo and anyway.
Everyone knows chroma key, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No,
I don't know what that is.
I thought this was this record. Listening to it, and certainly with this song, I just this record felt so 70s to me. Like part disco, part, I don't know, soft rock, yacht rock. Part like I don't know there, wow. there were yeah, moments
how many knives did just
no I mean none of those things okay are bad
well, you know I love the 70s you know
can you hand me the cable
this is how high tech NPR
this is,
oops
this is how we do
our keep
this is how we do our show we asked when we moved into the new building for a new cable if we could we get two cable.
But yeah they're optical so they're almost $12 I think but it made me think of a song. And you tell me if this is right or not.
Oh, a little ELO.
Yeah,
yeah, I love ELO. That,
but you gotta wait for the yeah. harmonies to kick right. in here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
No, it's a living thing.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. It's a living thing. I love this one.
So well,
I mean, I love ELO. It's kind of the model of all my albums, actually.
Would you ever want to try to work with someone like Jeff Lynne? Would that be cool?
I actually like, met him once.
And was it love at first sight?
He was really cool.
Did he say, please stop listening to my music?
Well, it's because he showed up at his door at 3 a.m. He didn't tell that part of the story.
Yeah, no, he's kind of like a... He's like in another world, I think.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet him again after, you know. But yeah, he's just like those albums are just with the strings and the acoustic guitars and just the great songwriting and his voice is incredible, you know. It's always been kind of like that and Pink Floyd have been like kind of like the boundaries I always.
That's so funny that you said that because the other song I thought of. This is from Obscured by Clouds.
Oh, yeah. Is your conscience at rest? I can hear that.
If I play
some of the grooves, the groove.
Yeah. This is Kishi.
Oh, yeah.
This is. So I've just gone from Pink Floyd to Kishi Bashi. This is.
Now they're going to sue me.
Who'd you
awesome.
Kill?
Wait a minute, which one is that?
That's Who'd You Kill.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah,
and I love that.
Sound like Gilmore.
Because there's stuff. Well, you tell me. But when you make music, I think there are not that many people who go and say, "I'm going to make a song just like this." But when you absorb music for so many years and then have the ability to make music, the stuff just comes out and it feels comfortable. So you might head that way. But you tell me. For you. You hear those two things, both from the 1970s, one earlier than the other. But is there something when you make music that feels like comfort food or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, well, with this album, I kind of push my vocals in ways that I didn't feel comfortable. You know, a little R&B.
Did you sit on something to get your voice so damn high?
I'm always sitting on something. But just kind of like more soulful singing. You know, I love like Donny Hathaway and Stevie Wonder, and I was like. So I went back to my church roots,
wow.
not my non-denominational church roots. But actually, that song, if you want to play the beginning of that song, it's a good example. That one started as like, I kind of like, I was like, man, I want a drum fill, and I want this big hit, and then I want it to go into a groove.
Oh, cool. So let's play this cut, Who'd You Kill?
Thank you.
Did you want to hear the bass thing at the end there, Robin?
Yeah, scooch to the last 30 seconds.
Scooch is a technical term.
You may not know this. Yeah, scooch.
Scoosh. Scooch it a scoosh.
There you go. Oh, yeah. That's bass, I guess. Is that you?
No, that's this guy Bram. Bram in-store. Great bass player.
So why don't we talk about who we got? We Matt
Chamberlain
is on the drums.
Yeah, Bram Instore is on Instore. Yeah,
and anybody from off Montreal who you've worked with?
Oh,
a bunch?
Kevin was playing a little.
Oh,
bit
Kevin
of
Barnes is on. Yeah, this? Yeah. And what's he doing?
He was playing bass on Big Star, the second bass, the higher bass.
Very cool.
He's got that signature bass.
One of the listeners asks, when you work with Kevin Barnes, would you say that you influence each other? Both your works are so layered and dense in different ways.
I don't know if I influence. We share babysitters and, you know, do sleepover swaps with our kids.
Yeah.
But
you have to take something away from that experience.
Oh, no, he definitely, he really helped me kind of like develop my sound like early on. He really pushed me like to do something new. And he's also like the consummate artist. Like he's always about provoking or like evolving, you know, things that tend to not really.
Well, that's the job of a producer. That's why I asked if you ever want to work, because they're the ones that push you in ways you wouldn't normally want to go. And I thought you did work with someone here because the sound is so different. But
I think it provoked myself.
Yeah, provoked yourself. So,
yeah.
Chase wanted to know if there are any reoccurring themes listeners should pay attention to when they listen to Sonderlust.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like this. This album that I wrote in a really tumultuous time in my personal life, you know, so there's a lot of like love and loss. And if you listen to the album, there's a whole arc to, there's a whole story of like, of a relationship gone, in many directions, you know, so.
How does that play out literally in music for you? I mean, you know, you understand music theory. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, are there things that you like, inner musical jokes that are happening that create, or things that you're doing to purposely create tension? Is it, in other words, is it a literal thing? You're feeling this turmoil in you. This music doesn't particularly sound like it's turmoil, and maybe in lyrically it is, but it really kind of is upbeat and poppy for a lot of it.
Oh, well, I mean, some of it's kind of dark and angry, and musically,
you kill.
Oh, yeah. That one. Okay, fine. Yeah. So that's just one.
Yeah. Just kidding. I mean, there's a lot of sadness.
There's that.
I mean, some of it's like the song Ode. Are you going to play more songs? Well, there's one called like Ode to My Next Life. There's like that one's like kind of crazy and angular, you know. But a lot of it, I don't really know how to emote musically. It just, it's a marriage. Like when I put the words with the music and as an afterthought, you know, when I analyze it later. You know, like the next day, that's when I'm like, okay, this is working, this is not. Or I've successfully tapped into to this feeling. You know, it's something that I can see afterwards. It's not something I can create on the spot.
Interesting.
We want to get through a few more listener questions.
And then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, Jacqueline writes, my friend heard the last track and said, are you watching a movie? I think a lot of your music has a cinematic feel and scope and emotion. How do visual elements inspire your song craft?
Visuals, well, sometimes they inspire me, but for the most part, I'm like pure music. And then, but I do have like, some songs in the past I have looked at visuals to score to, you know, to make music to. I think the orchestral part kind of makes it sound like it might be for a movie, but.
I was thinking 70s cop drama. I'm telling you, man, when I was listening to this record, I was like, 70s, this is so 70s. But you do scoring, though. You also work on films.
Yeah, I'm working on this, just while finishing up this big snowboard movie right now that's coming out.
Do you snowboard at all?
Like, I will a lot more now.
Really?
Well, they're going to
say they paid him in free lessons.
Free lessons. No, I love snowboarding, but it's a little too dangerous sometimes for me. Like, what I try and do and what I can't. I try and do stuff I can't handle.
And then you'd hurt that arm, and then you couldn't play the...
Yep. It's just not worth it.
Have you insured your arm?
I don't know. Should I? Who insures their arm? Joshua Bell or something?
Yeah, right.
I bet he insures his arm.
Where else you want to go?
Let's see. What are the questions from our listeners here? Let's see. Brian wants to know if you meditate and if that informs your writing process.
Ooh. I don't personally meditate, but I do things that might be like meditation, like sitting in my bed staring at the ceiling.
Staring into the middle distance.
Is that, yeah.
Yeah, that can count for something.
I do try and clear my head. I try and get bored, actually, and that's where a lot of, from boredom is born a lot of inspiration, actually, for me.
I find it's important to give, I mean, even if you don't have a mantra or something like that, but we're just constantly bombarded by sound and noise, and it's so important to give your brain some silent space.
Yeah, and it's like when I'm working on music, I take off all my apps on my phone, and I try and leave my phone in the house, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Because it's just, it doesn't really benefit you to be connected to the internet if you're trying to be creative, I don't think. But there's crazy YouTube video, or like I'm on Instagram, like looking at crazy stuff all the time. I'm in some weird Russian hole right now.
Like, so, well, tell us more so people can go look. Look at who I'm following
on Instagram. Okay. It's this crazy Russian. Like, there's all these stuff's crazy in Russia.
Awesome. Do you want to go out and playing a little bit of a song? If there's a song on here that we haven't sort of gotten to that you want to hear a little, we should hear a little bit of.
I don't know. The last song's kind of interesting. Honey Body. It's cute. It's cute.
Excellent. And you're going to start to tour this record?
Yes, I will be. I have a big tour actually starting end of September, going to all over all markets.
Fabulous.
Coming to a theater near you.
But if I don't come to your town, I'll come there next time.
I was thinking about the time the first time both Robin and I saw you, which was a
temple, Scottish Rite.
Temple in Austin. There were, you know, a handful of people there. We'll give it the benefit of the doubt. Say there were 40 people there. And
sorry, man, that feels ambitious.
How long ago was that?
I was going to say 20.
Sorry, four years ago, five years ago?
Probably 2011, I think, is when we first heard your music. It's really different now. You're playing in what size venues these days?
Yeah, it'll probably be between, I don't know, from 500 to 1,500.
So 930 club-ish.
Yeah, like in, that kind of vibe.
That's fantastic. That's a nice size space.
Well done.
They sound good. We're really happy for you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks.
I owe a lot to you guys, so thanks.
Our pleasure. So let's go out on this from Kishibashi, a song called Honey Body from the album Sonderlust.
That's the rule.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
Chess parties, oh yeah, honey body, you make me want to play with you. And if you wanna bring your dice, that'd be real nice. Six-sided dodecahedron, it doesn't matter. Oh yeah, honey body, you make me want to stay.